thinker part, but I do get a lot of opportunity to think. Sometimes too much, I get myself into trouble. But anyway, is everybody enjoying the feast so far? Nice weather, a little cooler now. It's, I know my wife is saying how cold she is. I'm enjoying the heck out of it, but we come from an area where we left. It was in the low teens and for the lows, and the highs were in the mid-30s, so this still feels pretty good to me, but we get to look forward to going back to that, because I guess toward the end of the week when we're heading home, a storm is coming in from the west, so we're facing possibility of snow when we get home again, so... But I love it. It's beautiful up there. Yes. Joel said, I'm a truck driver. I've been an over-the-road driver. I've been a logger. I've hauled everything but pigs. I refuse to haul pigs. But my dad also was a truck driver. He taught me how to drive. And like I told him years ago, I said, I don't know whether to give you a hug or kick you square in the butt. It's been a good living. You know, a lot of people have a negative perception of drivers, and unfortunately it's deserved, because there's a lot of them out there these days that don't show a lot of courtesy. There's a lot of new drivers that don't know what they're doing. They put them on the road with 4 weeks training and say, okay, here's an 80,000 pound rocket, let's go out and drive them down the roads. I ran 2 years with my dad before he ever turned me loose on my own, so he figured if he couldn't do it by then, I didn't learn anything. Sometimes that's the way my walk with God has gone. It's been a long, drawn-out process. And my wife and I, we didn't come to Christ till about 14 years ago. We've been married for 13 years, and our marriage was not doing so well. And we moved around the country thinking that the place was what was going to make us happy. But God drew us to Montana, and we ended up getting placed right across the street from a church, a home church. They invited us to come. I refused to go. I didn't want to have nothing to do with it. I was soured on the church years ago by the hypocrisy and what I saw. But then we got the opportunity to move to Oregon. I was on a logging job there. Was there about 4 months. Got laid off. First time the company had ever laid off a driver in 25 years, and I got laid off. So anyway, one day I was coming out of the woods, and I was looking over the hood, and I don't know if it was a voice or just a thought, but I heard, Mike, what the heck are you doing here? I thought, I'm working. But that's not what it was. It was God tugging me, you know, saying, you're not where you're supposed to be. So went home, told Brenda, I said, I want to go back to Montana. She literally did not speak to me for 3 weeks. It was an awful cold 3 weeks in Oregon. It's foggy and rainy, and then your wife doesn't talk to you. It makes it even colder. And so we went back to Montana. God got a hold of, well, my wife was at the end of herself. She basically told herself, I'm going whether he goes or not. So she started attending that home Bible study. And within about 3 weeks, God used, and I know a lot of you probably heard bits and pieces, there's a lot of new people here. But after about 3 weeks, God used one of the things that was my biggest weakness to draw me to him. At that time, I was a very jealous person. If a guy so much even looked at my wife, I was ready to kill. Yeah, I was hothead, jealous. So my wife would come home, excuse me, tell me about all the what she was hearing at this Bible study. I was running over the road at the time. It was a Tuesday night study. I was usually gone on Tuesday. So she would come home, or I would come home, and she would be all excited about what she was learning, but I didn't really want to hear it. And so... But she would explain that, you know, that what she would tell me is that everything she was hearing, she'd say, well, Joe said this, Mark said this, Tom said this, Bill said this, and after a while, it started stirring at me that my wife's going to a Bible study with nothing but men. So, any of you guys have ever had a jealous thought in your mind, you know what that does to a guy, you know? So, I happened to get what they call a quick turn. I reloaded Monday, and I was home Tuesday. So I was sitting in my chair, and my oldest daughter, Mandy, walked over and said, Daddy, are you going tonight? And Brenda turned and said, Mandy, be quiet. Daddy will go if he wants to. Well, in my mind, I heard she doesn't want me to go. So I turned and said, yeah, I'll go. So I'm going to go check this place out. And Well, to make a long story short, that was my first night, and I met a group that at that time was, they lived what they believed, what they taught. The gentleman teaching the class for the Bible study, he taught strictly from the scriptures. He didn't use his own interpretations. He would get done with his talk, and he would tell everybody just, this is what I got from it. You know, go home, study. If you find out you believe something different, let me know. We'll talk about it. And I never met anybody like that before. Everybody was usually somebody standing up at the pulpit, pounding on the pulpit, you know, pointing fingers. And then I'd see him at the bars on Friday nights. So, why bother? So, long story short, that was the beginning of my walk with Christ. I know that over the years, God had tugged on me several times. Three times that I can remember specifically that I should be dead, that God saved me because he knew he had a plan for me and he wasn't going to let me out of it that easy. The stupidity on my part, getting myself into positions or situations that weren't good. So, and at that time, my wife and I's marriage was about as close to divorce as you could get. And there again, God used a not-so-nice trait in both of us, that we were both stubborn and pig-headed. And my wife wanted to leave me, but she couldn't figure out a way to support the kids, and that was the only reason she stayed. And she shared that with me later on. I didn't realize it at the time, how close we were, but I look back now, and if she'd have filed the paperwork, we probably would have signed it, and we wouldn't be here right now. But God had a better plan, had a different plan for us. And so within that first, well, not even year, but that was in April, or first part of May, and God started working on me right away, and did some healing, made me look at some things that I never looked at, or looked at, but looked at them a different way, from his perspective. And my wife, she was praying to God about our situation, and we started out our marriage under a curse, basically. Her mom and her sister, and I don't have their permission to say this, but I have my wife. But when we first got married, my mom and my sister-in-law made a bet we would last 3 years. So the first 3 years of our marriage, we were under a curse, you know, and it was good times, but a lot of bad. And 99% of the problems that we were having were based on the fact that we liked to party, we liked to drink, and usually when that happened, we'd get into trouble and do stupid things. So God revealed a lot to us, and he pushed my wife to a point where she was willing to give me up, but she had to clean out her closet. So we got the opportunity to, we were raising horses at the time, and we were at a horse show, and I overheard a lady say that she wanted to know if anybody knew anyone that hauled horses professionally, and without even thinking, I just turned around and said, I do. Never hauled professionally, but I've hauled horses all over the country by myself. So we made arrangements to haul this lady's horse to Idaho, and on the trip to Idaho, before we ever got 5 miles out of town, my wife was in tears. And, busted. I thought I could get through this before she got back, but anyway, well, she's heard this story and I have her permission to tell it. Just can't get too detailed. But she's just bawling her head off, and I turned to her and I said, what's wrong? And she, that made it worse. She just was just, you know, crying fiercely. And she said there were some things she needed to tell me. And I said, well, go ahead. I said, I didn't think I could tell you. I didn't think I could get through it, so she'd wrote me a letter. And she handed it to me, and I stuck it in my pocket. And she said, you need to read that. I said, no, I don't. She said, well, she was afraid that if she told me what she needed to tell me, that she was afraid I'd kick her out alongside of the road 300 miles from home. But, so, anyway, I told her I didn't need to because there wasn't anything that she could have ever done that would make me ever want to leave her. And so our things had already started to heal before that point, so I was at a different place in it. And so we made a stop about 50 miles south, and I went into the men's room and read the letter, and it brought tears in my eyes. So that led to me, you know, God prompting me that, okay, she's cleaned her closet, now it's your turn. So we both we went outside and we shared and we cried and we hugged and we asked forgiveness, and Then we had an eight-hour drive to Boise, Idaho to go through all this. Well, then we get down to Idaho, and we got the lady that had us come down, she told me, she says, well, I have a downstairs apartment, you guys, or a bedroom in my basement that you guys can stay in while you're here. She says, I'll take you out to dinner when you get here. When we get there, her idea of a downstairs bedroom was better than any motel room I'd ever stayed in. Leather couch, fireplace, the shower and the thing, you could have fit 10 people. It was that huge. But anyway, we both realized through that God had given us a second chance. This was our, like, a second honeymoon. And everything went so beautifully, and the lady was a Christian lady. She was Catholic, but we got along very well. We talked a lot. Then we found an interesting story about this lady, that she had a lot of pictures, or she asked me one time if I had ever heard of Lawrence Welk. And most older, not sure what age barrier would go that far back. I don't want to say older or whatever, but a lot of people who remember Lawrence Welk, the bubble guy, the champagne guy. So I said, yeah, I used to watch him when I was a kid. You know, we watch him on TV in black and white. And she said, well, he was my father. It was her dad. And she had a lot of photo albums, and it was really a neat deal. But on the way back, we felt like we had started our life over again. We'd come to know Christ together. We were baptized together. And on the way back, I asked her, I told her, I said, we started our life over. I said, why don't we go all the way? And I just turned to her and I asked her to marry me again, in the right perspective this time, with God in the marriage. And thankfully, she said yes. So on our 13th anniversary, we got remarried in the right perspective. And that was 14 years ago. Next month, we celebrate 27. But if it hadn't been for God coming in our lives, we wouldn't be here today. I don't know where I'd be. But I guess I got a little long on that story. But anyway, I have trouble titling sermons, but I brought that story up because through the years after we've came to know Christ and our marriage got healed, I've been hammered by God that I would be in some form of ministry someday, and I never could figure out what it was. Then one night at I think it was a family life marriage conference that we were blessed to be able to go. Some friends of ours were going to go. At the last minute, they couldn't go, and they gave us their tickets. They were $75 apiece. So we got to go to this conference, and in the conference, they talked about a ministry package that they had for marriages that were in trouble. And as soon as they said that, I turned to Ben and I said, that's it. I said, that's what we're going to do, or that's what I'd like to do, or I feel like God's leading me to do. Unfortunately, I took it back to the pastor of the group we were at the time, and him knowing our past and knowing where we were at, he shot me down. He said, I won't support it. He said, I won't stop people from coming, but I won't send people there. So it's just like taking a balloon and sticking a pin in it. You know, my bubble just popped, air went out. And unfortunately, I let it do that. I respected the man, so I thought, well, he knows what he's talking about. Maybe I'm not ready. So over the years, God's worked on us in that. But I was always asking myself. Then, of course, then music came along, and I thought, well, is this my ministry? And it never has really progressed very, very well. It's going along. It's doing okay. I'm learning things. But it hasn't become the ministry that I feel God's leading me into. So Ben and I have been discussing it that, somebody said one time that you talk about or teach about things that you have experience in. Well, for 13 years, a bad marriage was something I had a lot of experience in. But through God's healing and teaching us, that we have gotten past that. And we still struggle. Everybody has struggles, no matter how perfect your marriage is. And what Mark keeps referring to on the schedule of seminars was supposed to be a seminar that Brenda and I were going to do when we came here on marriage. But our life has been so hectic lately that we just never got to put anything together. We've had some reference materials and some DVDs, and we've started ministering to a couple of couples back home that are really hurting. And I'm not going to mention names or details, but we have some people that really need prayer in our hometown. and us, that God will speak through us to be able to help them. But kind of got off track here, but marriage is something that is very, very important, not only to us, my wife and I, but to a lot of you out there who are married and some that are going to be married in the future. But marriage is very important to God. You know, He instituted marriage. He created marriage. And, you know, in our free will and our infinite stupidity, just like most things, we screw them up or mess them up. But from the very beginning in Genesis, right after the creation, and after creating man, that God realized that man should not be alone. And now we can go to this in Genesis 2 and verse 18. Where it said, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him. And out of the ground the Lord formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air, and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was his name. So Adam gave names to all the cattle, the birds of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was still not found a helper comparable to him. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. Then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman, because she was taken out of the man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." Now, there's kind of a joke that probably a lot of you heard of this. When God presented the woman to Adam, he looked at her and said, "Whoa, man." That's how the name came to be, but we know that's not true. But he definitely saw that she was different. She was beautiful to the eyes. And so, it's just reiterated so many times in scriptures how important that marriage is. It's one of the Ten Commandments: do not commit adultery. You know, God put man and woman together to stay together as one. And like I say, through our infinite wisdom, we have a tendency to mess things up in that. And in that, you know, over the years that Brandon and I have been together, you know, we've, like I said, next month will be 27 years, and 14 years, I would say it's 14 years A.D., after the death of our old life. So it's, people ask when we go to celebrate. I think Kelsey asked me one time, says, "Gee, Dad, what are you celebrating this year, 14 or 27? You know, so even the kids see that. But our oldest daughter, Mandy, she was around to see before and after, so she knows the differences, and she's not here today, but she's a blessing of the good times of that marriage, and all of our kids are. They're all a blessing. But one of the biggest problems that I've had over the years in my marriage, and I'm probably safe to say in my wife too, is that we didn't know the proper priority, what's important in life, in your marriage. And because for me, as I grew up, my dad was, he taught me a very strong work ethic. And I'm sure a lot of guys here probably received the same training from their dads, is that, you know, work is important. Well, I agree, work is important. You got to feed your family and take care of them. But it got to the point in my life, and my dad, unfortunately, that work was number one. And not knowing God, I didn't know any different. You know, I learned that work was my number one priority, and everything else came second. You know, my family came second. And that led to a lot of our problems, that I didn't have my wife in her proper place in my life and in my thoughts. But through studying, you know, to get to the point we are now, that God is, he's hammered us quite a bit. My wife was a horse trainer. She loved her horses. And unfortunately, I didn't support her very well in that. It took her time away from me. And like I said, I was jealous. So I was jealous of her horses, and I made no bones about it. I would never really acted like I cared. I did, but I didn't, you know. So, but in that with her, she was getting her identity from her horses. You know, that's who she was. She was Brenda the horse trainer. She wasn't Brenda the child of God or the wife of Mike or whatever. But in that, after a period of time, after we got closer to God, you know, God revealed it to her that, you know, this is not your priority. I should be. So, begrudgingly and not really wanting to, she answered what God wanted her to do, and she got rid of her horses. And I know it wasn't easy for her. It was hard. But she wanted to get her life in the right, you know, get her priorities right. And in order to do that, she had to get rid of them. God made her get rid of them. So, but it's been good. You know, we will eventually have horses one day. As you all know, Kelsey is now the horse crazy one, and she wants one. So, but so then after, that was quite a few years ago. And over the years, as God was working on me, I realized that my priorities weren't right either. And with work being my number one priority, then my wife, then my kids, then God. I had God in fourth place. That's not where he's supposed to be. So after a while, God started working on me about my priorities in my life. And in that, he prompted me to... So I was a truck owner-operator at the time, and he basically told me I had to get rid of my truck. I'm thinking, what? You know, this is my livelihood. It's my living. What am I going to do? And it wasn't, you know, lean on me. You know, I'll take care of you. So I fought it back and forth for quite a while. When we went to spring holidays in Big Ridge with Mark about three years ago now, And I've been feeling really hammered by God to do this. And I said, okay, now, I tell people this story, and they're like, you did what? I made a deal with God. I don't recommend doing that. Not unless you honestly plan on keeping it. Don't make deals with God. Well, I told him, I said, well, if you get me loads, it'll get me, because I was going to drive my truck and work my way down to Tennessee. It's the only way we could really afford to go. So I told him, I said, well, if you get me there... If you get me where I need to be, when I need to be, I'll sell the truck when I get back. It couldn't have worked out any better. I had loads going everywhere I needed to go. Good paying loads, too, so I was making really good money doing it. Okay, I get back from the trip. Do I put it up for sale? She's shaking her head. She knows. I didn't. Well, that summer, there was a MIA conference in Nashville that we wanted to go to. And that trip, I could not have bought a load to get me where I needed to be. But you know, still wasn't realizing what was going on. And I ran all over the country, and half the miles I ran was empty. And you don't get paid when you're running empty miles. So when I get back from that trip, finally, didn't think I was ever going to get home. I finally confided, and I had not told Brenda that I'd done this. And I got home, and I finally confessed it to her. I said, honey, I think I screwed up. She said, why? And I told her what I'd done. And she kind of eyes got, you said, you did what? I said, yeah, I made a deal with God and I didn't keep it. And so I ended up keeping that deal. I sold the truck. And so he just wanted me to get my priorities right. And so he worked on me for quite a while, and I still struggle with it. I still struggle with wanting to make that extra dollar, you know, like everybody does. But when after we left Tennessee, we went back home to Montana, and then we decided to make a tour. You know, most everybody that knows us knows that we travel a lot and we stay places. But we felt like God was leading us to go to Arkansas because there was a group down there that was real spirit-filled. And we thought that another example of what we thought we needed or what we wanted. And we did. We found out some things down there that we needed. But we got down there. So our problem was is we were struggling being bold for Christ, you know, speaking, you know, stepping out, you know. So this group down there, they do a lot of outreach. They do door-to-door ministries. They do tent ministries. They do a lot of different things in the community. We sat on the street corner in front of the courthouse playing music and singing and handing out brochures. And that wasn't an easy thing to do for me. And a lot of mixed reactions to us being there. But But then one night, they have a praise and prayer service on Friday nights. They play some music and a lot of quiet, lights low, candles lit, that you can really get in tune with God, you know, Friday night starting Sabbath. And so one particular night, the song came on, and Brendan and I were both on our knees praying. The song came on. I don't know the title of it, but the chorus, part of the chorus is, it's not what you can do for me, but what can I do for you, Lord? In the middle of that song, I felt like I heard God tell me to go home. And I didn't really know what that, where's home? First 32 years of my life, that was a little lumber town in Northern California. And I'm thinking, please no, please no. But so I said, okay, I said, all right, where is home? Where's home? And I felt like he told me it was Montana. So we get home, and Brenda's prodding me and said, well, did you hear anything tonight? Did you hear anything tonight? You know, because we fasted that day. So I've been praying for this because I felt like we're supposed to go back anyway. So she was prodding me pretty hard, and I wasn't saying anything. And I said, well, why are you afraid to tell me? I said, well, I'm not really afraid to tell you. I just want to make sure. So I said, well, what'd you hear? I said, go home. She said, okay, well, where's that? And I said, Montana. And she looked at me and she said, when did you hear that? So I told her that it was during this particular song, and she looked at me and her eyes kind of widened and says, I heard the exact same thing at the exact same moment that I did. So it's like confirmation that you can't deny. And so we went back home, but there were things that we wanted to do. We wanted to make Sabbath more for, you know, more than what it was. You know, all we have at home is there's a United Church that meets at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 hours of service, everything's done, everybody goes home. You don't see them again for another week. And we missed that with the group in Arkansas. They start out at 7 o'clock on Friday night. They meet back at 10:30, and they don't go home until after sundown. The whole church. That's what, you know, they spend all day together, and we kind of like that idea, and we realize that that's the way it used to be, and that's the way it's going to be in the future, you know, especially with these tabernacles like we're doing here. And so we took a few things back. We started meeting that was just our family on Friday nights, listening to some music, doing some praying, and then Sabbath mornings at 10, we'd have a meeting at our house. Then later in the afternoon, we go to United. And so anyway, but I was still with my truck. I was running and leaving for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and coming home for a week, going out 3 weeks. Well, so I wasn't able to be at home for Sabbath for, you know, 2 weeks in a row. So one Sabbath I happened to be in Arkansas and happened to be at the church we were at, and on a Friday night, during the same exact song that I heard go home the first time, I felt like God told me, I told you to go home. So here I was, you know, the same, back to the, not quite as bad, but still the same. I wasn't doing what God told me to do. So I asked myself, right, what am I supposed to do? Because what I do for a living, I can't be home. What I'm doing currently. So I went home. 2 days after I got home, a friend of mine that I hauled logs for last summer called me up and wanted to know if I'd be willing to buy another truck and come to work for him. And that would keep me home at nights, 5 days a week. So we did it. I went and bought another truck. Anybody want to buy a truck? I've got one for sale. Good truck, too. But then again, I was starting to let my priorities get out of whack. You know, so I was following the work again. So that now I'm hopefully going to be able to get back into what I'm supposed to do. But there's and one of those priorities too is that you know, that I had to figure out how to get the priorities in line with where they're supposed to be, and putting God first is where that's the beginning. And I'm working really hard on doing that, trying to get that part back in line. And then the second level priority was my wife. That I was still, you know, now that I was studying, I was putting God first, but I still had work ahead of her. And but so I'm working on that too. But in Ephesians. Ephesians 5. You know, God pretty much lays it out how we're supposed to treat our wives. Starting in verse 25, says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he may sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one has ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason," there again he quotes back earlier in Genesis, "for this reason man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Well, you know, when you read that, it's, you know, you're supposed to love your wife like Christ loved the church. And you try, I try to, in my simple mind, try to picture what that really is. You know, you look at what he did for us, and, you know, what are we, you know, we're supposed to follow that example. We're supposed to be Christ-like, remain in his image. So, trying to comprehend what that really means to me, you know, how I'm supposed to treat my wife, you know, and I, you know, and I don't put her up on a pedestal, I don't put her, you know, that kind of stuff, but the way I treated her over the years was not the way Christ treated the church. And whenever I read that, it really makes me ponder on just what that really was. You know, as we weren't there, we didn't get, but we have record of what, of how he was and the way he loved the church. And here's another in Colossians 3:19. Yeah. It says, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them." Now that one there, when I was reading it last night, that I used that one because I would look back over our life, and, you know, I was raised that men do not physically assault women. I know there's a lot of guys out there that do it, but my dad always taught me that, you know, that's one thing I did learn, you know, that, and I never have. I've been in, and I'm not proud of it, but I've been in drunken rages where I've yelled and hollered and screamed, but never once have I ever lifted my hand to my wife, and I never will. But when I read that, you know, should not be bitter toward them. Well, that she probably would have, probably sometimes she probably would have wished that I had have hit her instead of yelled at her. You know, sometimes you say words that really cut deep, and when you're in that kind of frame of mind, you're not thinking about the feelings of the other person. And I don't think she really would have wanted me to hit her. But you know, words can hurt just as much as actually physically hitting somebody, sometimes even worse. But so we've learned a lot over the years, but I never put her in her proper position in my life. It was always second. Well, I think I had her, I kind of wrote down how I used to have it. I was trying to remember what I put. Yeah, I always had a number two. Actually, according to the way it should be, she should have been a number two, but I didn't have God over her. So that made the big difference between where it is now and where it was then. And now there's the God is our head and not work. But and there's several verses, you know, how we, in 1 Peter chapter 3, and verse 7 said, Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. So that, you know, and I think a lot of guys, when they get to a certain, you know, when they get to a point like that, they think, well, the wife is weaker, this, that. Well, that makes them a doormat that they can walk all over. But it's not what it means. You know, it's not a dictatorship. It's a partnership. That you know, husband and wife are partners in this. You know, we have the role of being the spiritual head of the family, the stronger, the provider, the protector, the spiritual guide. But the wife is equally important in the family unit, you know, and anybody that ever says, "Oh, I'm just a housewife," they cut themselves really short. Because a housewife does a lot of it. My wife will testify to that. But we homeschool. She takes care of the home. She plans the meals, cooks the meals. And all I do is go out and drive a truck all day. I think I got it bad. You know, I come home and she's wore out and tired. And sometimes I don't realize that. God made us equal in His sight, but we are different, obviously. We have different roles. And God planned it that way because we were all equal. We are equal. But if He made us the same way, you know, why would we need each other? You know, she's strong in areas that I'm weak in. And she knows my physical strength far out exceeds her physical strength, and that's the way we're designed. And so I'm the one that chops the wood, cuts the wood, hauls it. And she's the one that takes care of the home. Like I said, it kind of irritates me sometimes when I hear him say that, you know, that, yeah, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to get myself in too much trouble here. But and like I said, with Brenda, she had learned what, you know, her priorities were out of whack too. And because it was always the horses, the kids, me, and God. And I didn't like being in third place. Would rather be second or first. But in back to Ephesians again, there's a lot of good stuff in Ephesians on the marriage. And again, in chapter 5, verse 22 through 24, it says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and He is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." And I think sometimes some guys will read these verses and say, "All right, see right there, it says you have to submit to me. That means whatever I tell you, you have to do." That's not what I believe he's saying there. But what I've learned too is that if I'm not right with God, how can she ever submit to me the way it says right here? You know, I have to be right with God before my wife can be right with me. And I have seen that, like I said, in my limited capacity of a brain up here, I don't always see it. And you would think that when a guy sees how, when he is submitted to God the way he's supposed to be, how the wife just kind of lines herself up with him and everything is good. And I've seen that. But yeah, like I said, I sometimes get so stupid that I go back to the old and then I wonder, why aren't things right? But, you know, then when I get back in His Word and I pray about it, and he whacks me upside the head and he says, you know, do what I told you to do and everything. And I'm not saying everything's going to be perfect. It never will be perfect, but I do notice when it's not right. But sometimes I don't realize it until later. And then, I'm trying to use as many submits as I did to the husband, you know, so I don't want the ladies to feel like I'm hammering on them. But, and again, in Colossians 3:18, excuse me, I woke up with a sinus deal today and had a pounding headache before I started, but it's going away. Verse 18, it just says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting to the Lord." Might as well get them all out of the way now. So, and also in 1 Peter 3 again, verses 1 through 6, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct, accompanied by fear, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing of gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands." I started to skip the last one, but "as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror." Never told my wife she's had to call me Lord. I'd probably be up here with a black eye right now if I'd have said that, but... And a lot of the problem we had over the years with me running over the road is that while I was gone, Brenda had to take care of the home. You know, she had to pay the bills, make sure everything got done. And kind of liked it that way. You know, I'd go to work, didn't have to worry about all that. I'd come home, and but then when I get home, I come home to a wife that was shocked. And I expected, you know, hey, I've been on the road working all week. You know, you're supposed to take care of me when I come home. And it's not what I got. And it led to a lot of problems over the years. You know, she always made the phrase, I don't shift gears. She always used my terminology. She says, I don't shift gears that fast. And I never could figure that out. It took me a lot of years to figure that out, that she can't go from mom, housekeeper, cook, bill payer, everything else, to being a wife. So I had to, and it, like I said, it took me a long time to figure out that if I treated her, you know, just came home, talked to her, spent time with her, treated her like she needed to be treated, that everything would go smoothly. But no, I'd come home and I'd be demanding, I'd want this, want that, do this, do that, and she couldn't figure out why she couldn't, you know. So it, but there again, you know, my, I wasn't treating her like the wife should be treated at that point, but then at one point she said, I've had enough, here's the checkbook, here's the bills. She says, I'm not doing it anymore. She says, if we go bankrupt, it's your fault. Or if they come and get the car or whatever, take the house away. So, but then again, though, she, when she turned that old back to me where it was supposed to be, it scared her because she had no idea where we were at. She'd been doing it for so long that she'd come in and ask me, how are we doing? How are we? Are the bills paid? Yeah, there you go. If you're going to give this to me, let me have it. You know, that kind of an attitude. But, and she still does. I pay all the bills now. I still got that part. And, but she still asks me how we're doing, you know. And then, of course, the day when she comes and asks me for money, you know, I say, we don't have any. You spent it all. No, she does pretty. She's actually more frugal than I am. She has to get after me for spending. But no, we are, you know, we were designated by God to be the head of our homes, not only the provider, the protector, but also the spiritual head that has to set an example. And I've told him over the years that for a long time I didn't set the right example of what a husband was supposed to be. So, you know, how are my kids supposed to decide what a husband's supposed to be, or a wife or whatever? So Brendan and I knew that we had to make some major changes to implement that, because our kids are getting up there now where they're, you know, my two oldest, they're at the marrying age now, and the two younger ones, they're going to be there soon, sooner than you think. So I told Mandy one night, I said, oh, she's going to be 23 in December, and I still remember, I still have the picture of just a few days after she's born, we're laying in my lounge chair, recliner, and she fit right here on my chest, was asleep, and I was asleep. And she was sitting on my, that's what it was, she was sitting on my lap, and I said, gee, you don't fit between my lap and my chest anymore, my chest and, and so I kind of curled up in a ball, I said, there you go, now you fit. But we have to, you know, as husbands, we need to set the example of what a godly husband is. And because they're, you know, back to Ephesians again. But God set it, he set an order of how he wanted things to be done. And in Ephesians 5, 23, I think I read it earlier, but for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. So, you know, we have, there's a level, I think we all know, you know, it's, and I don't like using the term God's government, because I don't like government. But there is an order of things. You know, God is the Father, and then there's Christ, our Savior. Then there's the husband, the wife, the children, and so on down the line. So there is an order of things, and when that order gets out of order, that's when things get screwed up, things get messed up. And like I said, for the first 13-year-old. I say the first 13, that was before we got remarried. We still had a lot of problems we had to work out, a lot of things we had to figure out. And And to be honest with you, we're just probably figuring some of those out today, so it's been almost 27 years. But the things are out of order. They just, you know, it just doesn't work. It probably can work, but it's not going to work very well. And I know a lot of, my wife was very, very nervous when she decided to give me control spiritually and financially of her home. Given my past, she figured I was going to turn into a tyrant and a dictator. And I think a lot of, there's probably a lot of women out there that fear the same thing. You know, if they turn over total control of their family to their husband, that's the way it's going to be, because you see it. And you see a lot of guys that use their wives for a doormat and a lot of other things that I won't get into, but it's that's not the way it's supposed to be, and that's what Brenda was afraid of, that's what was going to happen in our marriage if she totally turned it over to me, that I was going to be that way. And it could have very easily gone that way, but fortunately for the two of us, God was working in us, both of us at that time. So that, thank God, literally, that it didn't turn out that way. And because she, part of our problem that we had younger was the fact that we're both so stubborn and pig-headed, neither one of us would give in. And I blame her mom for that on her side. She said, yeah, you're just like your dad. So she could see that it could possibly go down that road. Like I said, it was, God was working in us enough at the time that it fortunately did not. And like I said, husband and wife, they're of equal importance to God, but that we do have different, we were created for different roles. And after watching my two daughters born, I'm sure glad I didn't get that role. Our first daughter was born cesarean. My first sermon that I gave in Eufaula, Alabama, I talked a little bit about that, and my wife said that I got a little bit too graphic, but you watch your wife's belly being cut open, and you know, they're trying to ride open to pull a little child out, and it was kind of funny, though. I will go a little bit into it. When Mandy was born, the doctor, when he cut the fluid sac to reach in to pull her out, he grabbed her by the foot because she was breech, rear end first. When he grabbed her foot to pull it out, his hand slipped. I heard him say, whoops. And I, of course, I'm trying to minister to my wife, you know. I hear this whoops, and I thought, you never like to hear whoops in an operating room. And I looked up, and here was this little foot sticking up out of Brenda's belly. Just sticking up there in the air, kind of moving. Okay. So, but thankfully she was born healthy and no problems. But then Brianna was born natural, and that's kind of unusual that a doctor will allow you to go cesarean one and then natural the next. But fortunately we had a doctor that believed that unless there were problems, you can do it. So I got to witness both ways the children are born, and like I said, I thank God that God did not give me that job. But they always said if woman had the first, man had the second, there would not be a third. So, but there's several, one of the, and I know I'm spending a lot of time on the women, but in Proverbs, and I believe Proverbs 31, I know there's a ministry out there, they call it the Proverbs 31 ministry, and so I thought I'd describe some of the ways that God looks at the women for us as men. And it starts 31, starting in verse 10. And it does go all the way to the end of 31, so I don't want to read it all, but it says, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. So that was a problem I used to have because my heart didn't trust her. But so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Walmart. She also rises while... Could resist that one. Walmart's only 18 miles away, so it's not too far. She also rises while it is yet night. And wait a minute. I missed that one. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go haul logs. My wife does not get up in the night to fix me breakfast. That's why she used to when we were younger, but, and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservant. Don't go there. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good, and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household. That's good. Living in Montana. For all of her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates. When he sits, lost my place there. When he sits among the elders of the land, she makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Okay. Gonna have to work on the kids on that one. Her husband also, and he praises her. Maybe I shouldn't have read this one all the way through. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own work praise her in the gates. That's a heck of a woman. And also, actually, I'm going to do this. Proverbs 18 and verse 22, just one verse this time. And he who finds a wife finds a good thing, and he obtains favor from the Lord. So I never knew that for a long time, that when I found my wife, I found a good thing. Oh, there were times, but also in chapter 19, another just a single verse. That houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. So that, God, I didn't really, Brenda and I didn't come together in a church. We actually met in a park, looking for a party, of course. But, okay, Julie, thanks. But, so I can't say that God, well, I guess I can say God led my wife to me. Didn't know it at the time, but it took me a lot of years to finally figure that out. And I know that with our oldest, our two older daughters getting up to the age where, they can be married at any time, that, it's a real struggle to find someone in the church that believes the way we do, that, there's a lot of young men out there that are would probably make an excellent husband, but the Bible's very specific about that. That it tells you to not be unequally yoked. And I explain that to my daughters. When these young guys come around and I tell them, they're not in the church. And I've seen so many. I've seen a few of the marriages that when they were unequally yoked, and they're not good. Sometimes they look like Brandon and I, that when we tell people that knew us way back when that where we were at in our marriage before we came to Christ, they're like, no, not you guys. You guys had a happy marriage. No, we were good actors. Went out in public, you'd think we were the perfect family, that we were deeply in love. One of the couples that we're ministering to, I asked the husband outright. He was being very critical of his wife, and I just asked him straight out. I said, "Do you love her?" He says, "I don't. I can't say yes." I said, "Well, then Brenda brought up the fact that you must love her because it's hurting. They're really struggling, and they were both in tears." And both of them could not admit that they loved their husband or wife at that moment. But when we pointed out the fact that you must love them, or it wouldn't hurt. If you didn't love them, it wouldn't hurt. And I say that, you know, sometimes I tell Brenda, I said, you know, I love you, but I don't like you very much right now. And I've heard the same thing from her. You know, we've never not loved each other. There's been times we wanted to take a baseball bat to each other, but anyway, so lost track. But in, oh, I know where I was, about it being unequally yoked. It's even sad, too, that I don't know the statistics of now, but I have heard it said that they are in past that the divorce rate amongst believing Christians is equal to that of the non-believing people of the world. And someone told me the other, a while back, that they think that has actually got above 50% now. So it's really sad that there's that much divorce in God's church. I don't know about so much God's church, but in the total professing Christian world, that, you know, of course the laws have made it so easy nowadays with no contest or no fault divorce that you don't have to have a reason. You can walk in there and say, we just don't like each other anymore and we want divorce. Well, it used to be you had to prove it to the judge. If you didn't prove it to the judge, you had grounds for divorce. You didn't get divorced. But nowadays, like I said, you just get to walk in there, sign a couple of papers, say, I don't like him anymore, I don't like her anymore. Good, done. You're done. Then they go on. They find another one, they do it again. They find another one, they do it again. And the statistics get lower and lower each time you're married. I think it was 50% after the first one, 30% after the success rates. Second marriage, 50%. Third marriage was like 30%. And I didn't even get into fourth and fifth. I do know some people that are on fourth and fifth marriages. And they're not doing so well. One couple I know, she was married four times. She's his second, and she actually took a gun and shot at him one night in a fit of anger. So that'll tell you something about fourth. But they're doing better though. They're actually doing really well right now. And years ago, before I even realized where I was headed in this walk, my younger brother got married. And he asked me to be the best man, and at the time, yeah, I accepted. So, but my marriage wasn't bad. Well, we've been married one. When did Gary and Julia married? 3 years after we did. Well, anyway, they've been married for a while now. But he asked me to be the best man, so I did. And I didn't sound very good, did I? I joyfully accepted. So. But he, when they have the, after the ceremony and you go to the reception, you know, they always have the best man give a toast, you know. But even at that time, I felt like the normal, have a good life, here's to you, you know, that just a few quick, easy words, slam down a gulp of champagne and it's over. I didn't feel like that was what I was supposed to do. So I started searching the scriptures for something that would help him and his new wife see some of the things, some of the problems they were going to have, and how to avoid those. And I didn't. But it took me to 1 Corinthians in the chapter 7. And I know a lot of people have read this one. But instead of that happy life, you know, whatever, I felt like something needed to be more. So I found this verse, but as I went up to give the toast, I didn't have a Bible. Fickle figure. So I asked the minister that gave the service if I could borrow his. Well, it was all the way across the parking lot, Crescent City, California. It's pouring down rain. So I went and got it. He gave me the keys. He wouldn't go get it. Gave me his keys. I went and got it. Came back. Found the verse. Got up. And told my brother, I said, this is going to be different than the normal, you know, raising a glass toast. It's going to be different. So I opened it to 1 Corinthians 7, and I just read the first 16 verses. So now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. He didn't like that part. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Is he not looking? And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Read that one quick. Do not deprive one another, except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But I say this as a concession, not as a commandment. For I wish that all men were even as myself. That's not me I'm speaking of. But each one has his own gift from God, one in this matter and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them to remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or become reconciled to her husband, and a husband is not to divorce his wife. I wish they should read that at a divorce hearing. But to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbeliever departs, let them depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such case, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? And when I finished that, I happened to look up, and my brother and his new wife were both wiping their cheeks. And when I... This is one of the times where I was kind of scared me, but when I took the Bible back to the minister that I borrowed it from, he had a big grin on his face, and his elder that was beside him was grinning too. And this part that scared me is both of them looked up and said, you know, you're going to make a great minister someday. Okay. Didn't know what that meant. But... touching on that a little bit, that in our marriage, my wife and I's marriage, divorce was a viable option. You know, she couldn't figure out how to get out and be able to support the kids, so she stuck around. And my thought on it was that I'm not going to be the one everybody's going to say it was his fault. It's going to be her. You know, if anybody leaves, she's going to leave, and she had the same thought. If, no, I'm not leaving, he is. So God used her stubbornness to keep us together. But and I know there's some that, you know, the one that we talked about, that if you're married to an unbeliever and they're willing to stay with you, then God requires you to stay married. And I know some people that are in that situation that and they're struggling really hard because they want to submit to their husbands or wives, or no, that's usually the wife. You usually find out in those situations, it's 9 times out of 10, it's the wife that's a believer and a husband that isn't. And the wife really wants to follow the guidelines of being submissive to her husband, but they talk about, well, how far do you take that? How far do you go to be submissive to your husband? And so it's really difficult in that situation. We have a friend in Texas that they're both believers, but she's starting to lean toward believing about the Sabbath, and he isn't. But she won't do it because she feels she needs to be submitted to her husband, and he's not there. And so she's really in a hard place. You know, she wants to do it, but she won't because of the verses that say you're supposed to submit to your husband, and he's the head of the household. So it's really difficult, but... And that is specifically why I believe that God says you do not be unequally yoked with a non-believer, because it does lead to the problems that some people are having today. And I think the last verse I had, or verses, a couple, in Matthew 5, to be exact. And in, let's see, verse 31, it says, furthermore, it has been said that whoever divorces his wife, let him give a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, so that's where Jesus was talking about the times of old, and Moses, you know, when the Pharisees said, well, what did Moses said, you could divorce your wives, but it was because of your hard heart. But here, I think he's changing that. not abolishing any laws or rules, but he's modifying it to the way it's supposed to be, that whoever divorces his wife, let him or her give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, this is Jesus speaking specifically, whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. So he's, you know, that's the guy that wrote the book. Tell us, you know, that is not the way it's supposed to be. And then there's Matthew 19, verses 3 to 9. This is where the Pharisees came from. And the Pharisees also came to him, testing him, and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them in the beginning made them male and female? And for this reason a man should leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. And they said to him, why then did Moses give command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? And he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. So it's, in my opinion, right there, he does give one specific reason for divorce. That's it. You know, when you hear people say, well, we can't reconcile, or we're not compatible anymore, or I don't love her. What the Bible says. You know, if she or he is unfaithful, commits adultery, then that's the only out. And like I say, you hear so many people these days, they just had a good friend, him and his wife decided they didn't want to be married anymore, so they went down and got divorced. No reason. And like I said, in the beginning of our marriage, that like I said, divorce was a viable option, but the way where we're at right now and in our life and our marriage, that it's not an option. You know, there's no, you know, except for the one reason. I mean, even then, you know, we try to work it out. You know, God doesn't, that's the one tool that the enemy has been using for years is to destroy the family unit. And Brother Bill talked about it yesterday, unity in the body of Christ, but he also goes after unity in the family. You know, you look at the family situations in this country today, and you know, it's horrible. You know, that the divorce, the you know, single parents, you know, the other issues that I'm not going to go into that are out there too. But so I give this just kind of a beginning of the ministry that Brenda and I feel like God has led us into. And I know I didn't have a seminar. We didn't have something put together like Market Hope we had, and but I felt like at least I could speak about it, kind of give you an overview of what we're doing and where we came from, and hope I didn't bore anybody or offend anybody. That was not my intention at all. I just used scripture. So anyway, that's all I've got. Thank you very much.